And now, IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme, the voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
You're very welcome along to the programme. Good morning if you're just after joining us, and thanks for sticking around if you've been with us since the top of the hour. In the first hour of the show, we're covering issues that are important to the people of County Donegal. We were talking about the changes to the criteria for the appointment of special education teachers, which is going to affect every school in this county. We were speaking to a gentleman who's very frustrated and, you know, concerned about the defective concrete portal and access to it. It's affecting hundreds and thousands of people right across this county. And we were also talking about the plight of farmers in Donegal and elsewhere. So if you didn't tune in for the first hour, that's what you missed, because we're here covering the issues that are important to us here in the Northwest. Coming up after 11 o'clock, a little later on, by the way, we are going to be having a debate on March 8th referendums. So if you are unsure about it or any questions in relation to it, please get in touch with us and share your views. 086 60 25,000. I think we're all sort of getting into that process now where we're trying to see the wood for the trees. But as I said, also interested in those of you who may think it's a waste of time and not interested in it either. All right, so I'm going to get to some comments, then we'll have the bingo numbers for you. Morning, Greg. The government seemed to have no end to the millions of pounds or euros being paid for new hospital for the new hospital in Dublin, which still has yet no end in sight. But cutting all the services for everyday life? No problem, they say. Thank you. The woman, Marie, is making so much sense. Good on her. And it's a joke how money is squandered. I drop children at a school and I know a bus driver dropping off one Ukrainian child every day, and he'd drive quite a distance to do so. And all other Irish children walking or their parents paying someone to drop them off. I've nothing against Ukrainians, but it's a joke. Let the government look after our own people as well as others. People with children with special needs have a tough enough time without fighting all the time for what they're entitled to. Personally, for me, I get everything that you're saying there. I would be familiar with similar stories as to what you've just outlined there, but I can't compare. All children should be treated equally to me, in my opinion, and I'm sure you're of that opinion too. Greg, we have a business commercial building falling to bits with defective concrete, yet we are still expected to pay rates. I mean, how could that be? It's falling to bits, the commercial property. And I think the owners of commercial properties, farm buildings and what have you, and community halls will have probably felt a little bit unheard throughout all of this, because, of course, we're also talking about people's houses. And, you know, people are so gracious. People who are struggling, like that listener there with a commercial property or a farmer, you know, with an outbuilding that's falling to bits as well. Often they want to highlight their situation with us, but they don't want to come on air because they say, and this is how gracious they are, well, listen, it's not our house, and there's an awful lot of people there that are kind of worried about their property, and we don't really feel that, you know what I mean? And I think, as I say, it's gracious, but there are also people who need to be spoken to as well. Good morning. At the minute, all we're hearing about is recycling, which is great, but my concern is that we're paying high fees for this. One week it's domestic waste, then week two it's recycling and food waste. Last Wednesday I watched a local bin company collect all waste in one lorry, domestic, recycling and good food waste. All three bins were emptied into the one lorry. So would all the recycling be cross-contaminated and wasted? So why are we paying two charges for bin collection when all is being wasted? I've heard that and witnessed that myself, where all the bins go into the one bin lorry. Not sure what the ins and outs of that are, but it doesn't feel right. Can I ask, actually, we're a couple of months in or a couple of weeks in now to this recycling of plastic bottles and what have you. Are any of you doing it successfully? Is there any good news stories about that? Or even maybe you've had problems whereby the bottles aren't being recognised or what? I don't know. But as I say, you know, there's a lot of conversation and talk in the lead up to it. Maybe your children have really embraced it and it's their pocket money or something. I don't know. but a couple of weeks in, what's your experience been of the deposit return scheme? I'd be really interested, and I think we all would be interested, actually, to get some views on that. So have you been engaged in the deposit return scheme? Is it working great for you or your family? Or maybe you have tried it, it didn't work. wasted time, whatever it might be. As I say, it'd be interesting to get a sample of what's going on now. Hi, Greg. The argument in favour of farmers is very simple. Do we want to have national food production self-sufficiency or not? Are we going to price our own farmers out of the industry and become dependent on corporate food production? Surely food self-sufficiency should be a prime issue of national security. Food security, yeah. I mean, when others control our food, we've seen what can happen there. So, yeah, there's a strong argument that we should be independent in that regard. Greg, that man is there a very long time and the store seems to be doing nothing about him. This is the person standing outside a particular store looking for change. I assume it's because he's on the footpath and there's nothing that they can do. Regarding the RTE lump sum payments, €2 million was handed out between five people. €450,000 for one person's payoff. TV licence abolishment is one thing, but RTE should be taken off air completely. The Oireachtas Committee is futile. RTE still do what they want. There are so many Irish people struggling, and for people to get that kind of money is outrageous, they say. Greg and Frank, there's a global agenda to wipe out small farmers so that the elites can leave us no choice but to eat their processed insects, says Mary. Now, having been first elected to Buncrana Town Council in 1994 and elected Mayor of Buncrana in 96 and again in 2011, and elected President of the Association of Municipals of Ireland in 2006, and in 2019 elected Mayor of Inishowen, more accolades. Councillor Nicholas Crossan has decided to, I don't know, you don't hang up your boots, I don't know what you hang up when you're a politician, but decided not to seek re-election. 3 decades in public life. Councillor Crossan, a tough call for you, a tough decision to make?
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners. Yes, Greg, one of the toughest decisions that I made in my life. As I said, it's very, very difficult to walk away from something that you really love doing.
Now, it's up to you to decide when you want to announce it or when you want this to become public. But it's not that long ago, I think you were on the Friday panel and I asked if you were seeking re-election. At that time, you were. Were you wobbling at that point? But as I say, it's your prerogative to decide when to announce it, right? But had you been thinking about it for some time or was this actually a more recent decision?
No, I have been thinking about it, Greg, but I felt duty-bound that I established independent grouping within the county councils in Ireland, and I felt duty-bound to inform them the same time as I informed the people of Donegal. I knew we had a meeting coming up last Wednesday and Thursday in Arklow, and I said that was a good opportunity for myself to inform the most loyal band of people that I've ever worked with, Greg. So I felt duty-bound to tell them, and when I got into the room, the press releases went to Donegal, and I told them at the same time, so it was a good way to go out.
Yeah, for sure. If this is a pie chart, you know, where's the positive and where's the negative in the 30 years for you? Because, you know, it's a thankless task at times, much of the time.
Yeah, funny, somebody said that the conference we were at, one of the speakers said, you know, you're a community worker until you get elected. And then when you become elected, then you become the opposition. Like, I've been working, involved in the community since, actually before I left school, on various different items in Buncrana. And I enjoy working with people. And it was, I suppose, a national progression on Tony Yiller, an independent town councillor, and we canvassed for him in the by-election in 76. That's 48 years ago. Tony resigned, I think, 85. His daughter took over to 94. And I seen an opening then for a seat in Buncrana. And that's what I ran for then. I wanted to carry on the work, I suppose, that he was doing as well, and enlarge my own issues and my own ideas. Make the council more clear to the people. Clarity, transparency. Let the public know what was happening in the council chambers.
In relation to that, did you ever have aspirations above council level? Did you ever were you ever approached, or did you ever? And this may be on the public record. I just don't have the information in my head at this time. You never contested a national election, did you?
No.
And did you ever get close, or did you ever have a desire to?
Very briefly, in 2016, there was a general election, then followed by a Shannon election. So when I formed the independent group in Ireland, you probably need to get into Shannon, you need about somewhere between 80 and 120, 30 votes, depending on what panel we're on. And for about a couple of months, I thought of running for the Shannon myself. And how I changed my mind, I was out around the beach in Buncrana one day, I walked myself and my two wee dogs, and I said to myself, what in under God would I be doing sitting up in Dublin when I can do so much in Donegal? So I went home and told my wife, I said, no, I'm not running for the Shannon. I called a meeting of our own group and said, no, I wasn't running. But since then, we got three independent councillor or senators elected Shannon Éireann. For the first time ever in 2016, we got an independent with outside the university panels. But I think it was a great achievement. And since then, we've got three altogether independent senators.
Where do you think we are politically now compared to where we were in terms of, you know, the power or influence of local politics? I mean, you were in Buncrana Town Council, and we had Letterkenny Town Council, and then we had the Ballyshannon
Town Commissioners and Bundoran Town Council.
Now we have sort of the municipal districts, and you know, then and even coming down to the County Development Plan, one of the most recent conversations we're having, it's really, you know, whatever the will of the council, it really is actually up to a person nationally to decide the direction we go in that regard. Has there been a that's one example, but has there been a significant watering down in your view of, you know, both, I mean, obviously with the loss of the town councils, but generally with the role of the council, even like you could talk about water responsibility going to Irish Water and what have you. Do you feel that you can affect less change now than you might have in the past, really, as an elected rep?
Yes. 100% what you're saying, Greg, our powers has been diminished, and that's what we've been talking about. Because if you want local politicians and people to make decisions at local level, you must give more power to the councillors. The power of the councillors has been constantly eroded. And I think that's where we're getting mixed up, and we do get mixed up in Donegal County Council, because meeting after meeting, we get motions coming in, which in my opinion are national motions, which has nothing to do with Donegal County Council. And we're handing power to the national, the senators and the TDs to take over from ourselves, because they're looking on their votes for the next time out. But the erosion of county councillors has 100%. What we have to do now is pass the budget. The development plan, no matter what we put in the development plan, if the OPR doesn't like it, they send it on to the minister, and if the minister agrees with the OPR, they can change our plan. So I keep saying, where is it our plan? It's not really our plan. Mm-hmm. We can try our best to get it in, but at the end of the day, it's
going to be
overarching
different.
Powers.
Yeah, it's going to be a different council. And I won't hold you, but I think we should have a chat in the future. 30 years in politics, there's a lot of stories in there, and we could probably have a good chat about that down the line. But it's going to be a different council, at least five people. There's yourself, two Sinn Féin reps, Tom Conaghan down in Donegal Town as well. And who is to say who may announce? What way do you think the council needs to look post June elections?
Well, that's up to the people. And I've said from day one, the electorate are not a silly people. They do elect. Everybody elects the government or the councillors they get. But I have great faith in the people of Donegal to elect the right candidate, somebody to represent them. And I would encourage people to come out and vote in June at the local elections and have your say. Don't be sitting on the fence. You know, 50% now of the people are not voting. That trend is going in the wrong direction. I would encourage, and I'd also encourage a lot of community candidates to go forward and put their name on the ballot paper and go forward for election.
And finally, is that it? Or are you going to ensure that the Christmas lights are switched on within a millisecond of the time announced? What's the future hold?
That kind of has stuck. All right. No, I'll not be walking. Look, when you live in a town like Buncrana, you're never too far away
from the general public. I've spoken to former politicians who would never come back, that they sort of went back to, you know, being part of the community. You know, you're an independent anyway, but even those with a political affiliation sort of, you know, being able to drift into being apolitical, if you know what I mean, and would never return to elected politics again because they feel they can have so much more influence and what have you, you know, in the community rather than, as you say, it's quite an interesting way you put it, that what, you know, post-election, then you become the opposition pre-election. I'd say you're looking forward to getting back to that to that role, doing what you do, but not with the moniker of councillor.
Yes. Look, Greg, be under no illusion. I enjoyed being a town councillor for 20 years and the county council for 30. I enjoyed every minute of it. I enjoy helping people. And as you well know, I enjoy talking to people as well. But somebody said to me only yesterday, somebody says, there is a time for everything and everything has a time. And I think it was a great statement for it. And I think there's the old song, you got to know when to hold them and when to fold them and when to walk away. So I would just, and Greg, before, in case that you do, I'd like to first of all say to a big thanks to my wife and my family for putting up for 30 years. I mean, it is a huge sacrifice. When I started out as a town councillor, I was a bread man with two young children. And now I'm retired with three adult children, if you want to call them that, there, spread all over the place. So it has been a huge, rather more entail for me. It's just a huge turn of life. But it was, would I swap it for anything else? No way. No. Will I be sad when June comes? Yes, I will be. But I think I've done my part, and I think that I would encourage somebody else to take up the mantle now and go for it.
Yeah, and in relation to families and friends, they of course they feel every up, but they feel every down too, very personal level too. So it's a big sacrifice for anyone in a family, because there's peaks and troughs, but they feel that we all feel the troughs with those we love. You know, more personally and deeply than we might the highs. Not, they're there for the highs too. Yeah. But I hope you know what I'm saying.
We did talk about that before, Greg, and it was brought up at a conference too. The abuse on Facebook of county councillors. We can take a bit, but once it starts goes on to families, then it's something totally, totally different, you know. And I do
think,
sorry.
What about the abuse on air? One of the biggest announcements that you've made now, as it turns out, towards the end of your tenure, is that some people don't like me, and I'm still waiting on the list. That was the big revelation from last week. You could have dropped the bombshell that you were retiring from politics, but instead you decided to hit me in the ghoulies with that one.
I wish you know me, Greg. No better than yourself. I wouldn't let you go away without a good jag.
Come here. Have a goodie. All right, and best wishes to you and your family. Take care of yourself.
Greg, thank you very much, Greg.
All right, take care. Bye-bye, Nicholas. Thanks. Councillor Nicholas Crossan there. He's one of a number of politicians now that are choosing to go. And I know people are... I know that we are all very opinionated and we form our opinions and we have our views of maybe elected reps or not. But fundamentally, we are all neighbours and humans at the end of the day. And I've had my scuffles on air with Nicholas in the past and what have you, but no matter who it is in this county or whoever I've dealt with, we're all neighbours and we're all part of the same community and but that sounds like I'm saying we're not friends. I don't really have any politicians that are friends, if you know what I mean. But anyway, my point being is that I still wish anyone the very, very best and would never hold any ill feeling or grudges or anything like that. Neither would Nicholas or any of the other, or most of the other elected representatives. So we wish him, my point I'm trying to make is that at the end of the day, I wish everyone the very best going forward, not least Councillor Crossan there. Happy 8th birthday to Peter Patton. He's in Maharaboy, Letterkenny, from Kathy, Tim, Matthew, Harry, and Matthew, Tim, Harry, and who's the third, fourth, fifth? Holly, okay. Happy birthday to you, Peter. Peter Patton. I love names with Peter Patton, Hudson Hughes, Finn Fury. Double lettered names sound cool, I think. All right, okay. So let's get some clarity about the situation as it relates to accessing the various portals or what have you in relation to defective concrete scheme. Councillor Martin McDermott has joined us at short notice. Appreciate it, Martin. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. So am I your friend or is it
I knew as soon as I said that, it's like, yes, of course, all friends. We're all friends. Me and you bump into each other. I like you. You know, I don't know what you think about me, but yeah, we are, because we're all part of the one community here.
I like you too.
All right, okay. Well, come here, put in a good word for me. Anyway, come here. My councillor, Martin McDermott's also chair of the Defective Blocks Committee with Donegal County Council. So just to be clear for all of us, how many portals are there that people at the beginning of this scheme, Martin, people would be accessing?
So the scheme as it sits at the moment, so the portal that was there was the portal from the old 90-10 scheme. So when the new scheme came in back in mid-July of last year, that portal had to be updated to all the new regulations, all the new legislation that was coming in, because a lot of it changed. There was the availability of second homes, how the information was inputted, particularly for showing that you're the principal private resident. That changed. MPRN was involved then, air code was involved then. So there's quite a bit of work to be done, plus all the recalculations of all the applications had to be redone as well. Now, the new portal that they've been working on here now, and Greg, I will say that, you know, this is taking longer than expected, absolutely, and it is a problem for families. I know that. I get the calls every day on this. But the new portal, particularly for payments and for ancillary monies, will be a lot more streamlined and a lot more simpler. That portal was to be up and running after Christmas. There was issues, IT issues, that had to be resolved. They have now been resolved. There's also quite a bit of information to be inputted into that portal from applications that's already in with the council that has to be uploaded, the information has to be done, so that when it goes live, that Martin McDermott or Greg Hughes can go onto their portal and their information is there then. Now, I've had conversations, lots of conversations over the last few weeks on this. I had another conversation this morning, and I'm told that if not by the end of this week, certainly by next Monday morning, the new system will be ready and go live.
So if people have, you know, before we get to what the situation is going forward, there are a few people caught in a bit of a purgatory on this, though, between the old portal and the new portal. And this is where it's going to start getting complex. And I hope people don't tune out because this is really quite important. And there's 300 families affected by this, circa 300 families affected by this. So what is the sort of the in-between that they find themselves in, Martin, just for clarity?
Well, I suppose to applicants, and at the moment, there's, as you know, there's 43 houses completely finished. There's about 70 commencement notice submitted to Donegal County Council. So 70 people have said we're ready to start work. A number of them have started work. And as of today, about a couple of weeks ago, there was a serious issue here with people that had started work and couldn't actually access the scheme to get their money. We met 2 weeks ago with the council to discuss how we could move this forward. So then what they said, that they would contact those people if they send them their information, they can email their information in by email, and that they would pay them, and they are getting paid today. So those families are getting their money, the ones that were in the situation where they started work.
Does this reference what we heard earlier on, the situation some find themselves in, that they got contractors on site, they were doing the work, but no money forthcoming, they also have to pay the bills, so maybe moved on to another job. You're saying those that have the correct documentation and all in should start receiving some of their stage payments today then?
Yes, that's right, correct. Okay. And again, if there's families out there, you know, that are in that position, you know, email that onto Defective Concrete Blocks, because it will be done manually until this is up and running, because we can't, under no circumstances, Greg, can we have, you know, contractors waiting the money. And I know there's issues there, and there's issues with getting paperwork on, but the most important thing is that we do get money, particularly to contractors, because this is, you know, contractors are out a lot of money at the start of this, and they need to be able to get their money on a very, very quick timeline. And that is something that, you know, the new system that's coming in will really help with. It'll really make it more simpler so they can get their money within a couple of weeks of submitting documentation to Donegal County Council.
Now, there are a group of people, the same group of people, is it, that will not get fees back? What fees are we talking about and why not?
Yeah, so there are a situation there with fees. So go back to December of 2022, the minister made a recommendation to pay the fees to everyone that was waiting on fees, whether you had your application determined or not. Now, anyone that submitted their application after that date would have not got their fees back.
These are testing fees, are they?
These are testing fees, yeah. So when the new scheme come on, anybody that apply now to the new scheme don't have those testing fees. So those testing fees are absorbed by the housing agency.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyone that, say, come in January, February, March, April of 2023 would not have got their fees back. Now, we had a delegation with the department just before Christmas. Myself and Councillor McGuinness and Councillor Doherty met with the department. The department have committed that they will allow the local authority to pay back those fees to people, whether they have a recommendation or not. Because I suppose the problem here, Greg, is that the housing agency now are looking at those, and they're putting that determination that they'll come back to you, say, maybe on the third quarter of this year or the fourth quarter of this year. And that means that you couldn't get your money back until there was a recommendation made. But the department have committed that they will allow the local authority to pay back those fees. Now, they haven't sent that in writing to the local authority yet. Now, we were back onto them last week, and they said that they would have something to the local authority within the next two weeks.
Is everyone going to get their fees back, or is there that wind?
Everyone should have their fees back, apart from those families that came into the scheme.
But they will get them. They will get them?
They will get them back,
okay,
yeah. But
right.
Anybody that was in the scheme so anybody that had already applied to the scheme pre the 13th of December of 2020 should have got their fees back anyway, because they're eligible to get their fees back. This is only for the people that fell after that date. So the fact that no one pays fees now, bar their building addition assessment, I mean, it's only right that those people should get their fees back and should get the fees back right away.
Okay, this might cover this texter then. Hi, Greg, could you ask Martin, what's happening re people who applied for the old scheme and are having their engineer's fee deducted from the 420? They're being greatly disadvantaged compared to someone applying now to the new scheme who do not lose out on this money. Thanks. That's literally what we've just been talking about, I believe. You're saying...
No? That's another different situation,
oh, no,
Greg,
right,
again,
okay.
from what we were talking about. So... again, this was something we discussed and met with the department on, because the fees that someone paid. So if I was on the old scheme, I paid the fees out myself. I got those fees back. When the recalculation was being done of my costs, that fee was being taken out of my recalculation. So we went back, had a conversation with the directors and service and the council on this, and we went back to the department and says, look, that's not fair. That can't be right. How can I be punished my $6,000 now when someone coming into the new scheme doesn't have to pay that $6,000? So if me and you had the same size of house, if me and you had a 2,000 square foot house tomorrow morning, and I was getting 300,000 and you were getting 300,000, I was getting 294,000 and you were getting 300,000. So that was unfair. So that was sorted, and they said no, the fees would not be taken out. But someone that's over the £420,000 mark, the fees are not taken out of that. Now, there is a situation if you hit the 420, you drop back to your fees at 413. Again, I don't feel that that's correct, and I've had a conversation with the council on Thursday and Friday about this. We've sent correspondence to the department to say, look, anyone that's getting the 420, getting the full entitlement of 420,000, and that six shouldn't be coming out of that. So I would hope that will be rectified in the next few days.
Still a work in progress. Where are we at in terms of the whole debate about inner leaves, foundations? You know, you would be, of course, very familiar with the recent science and what have you. Engineers perhaps being reluctant to stand over outer leaf only when we know there's, you know, defective elements to the concrete in the internal, and it will deteriorate. It's just about time. And also the issue of foundations. Where are we at in relation to that? Because I think there's still an awful lot of people that are not prepared to continue down this road until we have some clarity there.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable. And the foundations aspect of it is something that won't be determined until the National Standards Authority come back with their recommendations. I would think that's probably going to be early next year. Certainly not going to be. It's not going to be this year. Again, there's a lot of conversations going on, and you know quite well, Greg, that the redress focus group on the banking are having conversations with both the banks. Engineers Ireland and the insurance companies to make sure that if a house is remediated, that it's both insurable and mortgageable. And they are the two things that, you know, you can't remediate a house and not have it insurable or mortgageable. It just doesn't make any sense to anyone to be in a situation like that. So there is a lot of conversations.
With that in mind, though, Martin, how can it proceed at all unless those really vital issues are, unless those real vital issues are determined? Because, you know, like, even if you completely rebuild a house on the old foundations now, okay, and theoretically you could get insurance, that could be negated potentially with new recommendations that foundations could deteriorate early next year. You know, like, so even someone who possibly could get a quote now, if the guidance is updated, they could end up with this brand new house that they can't insure, sitting on potentially defective foundations. I can't believe it's actually February 19th, 2024, and we're still kind of having to negotiate this type of stuff. But that's a big question that really needs answering ASAP. I wouldn't move forward at this point.
No, it is a question, and people can, as you know, replace their foundations if they so wish.
At their cost.
And it's at their own cost, and it's not at the cost of the scheme. And some people are doing that, and some people are checking them as they go along. But certainly, I think, you know, Engineers Ireland in particular, who are the experts in this field, you know, certainly have to have strong conversations with both the National Standards Authority, the banks and the insurance companies to come out with, you know, an answer on this question. Because you're right, Greg, it is a very, very important
question. I can't see any scenario where the insurance industry will underwrite a flawed scheme. Now, if that scheme turns out the foundations are included, I can't imagine any organisation, particularly an insurance company, that will look for any out in a claim. I cannot see any scenario where they will effectively be underwriting the roll of a dice that foundations will be okay.
Yeah, and I think probably there's a meeting, I think, in 2 weeks' time on that. And I think there'll be, you know, hopefully there'll be some clarity from all those organisations at that will give us a bit of a more clear way forward. Greg, just on one of your listeners that was on with you previously,
yes,
about their
storage?
The storage,
yeah,
facility in relation to having extra costs. So if their storage facility cost them 4,000, for instance, if that was the cost, and their ancillary works to that, say for 500 or 600 euro to make that, you know, you get it onto the house to put down the concrete, that can be claimed back as part of your...
Even if it's a shed, you know, and you put it in the same garden and someone might look at it and go, well, that's handy, you'll have that shed after the house is rebuilt. They're not viewing it like that there. It's seen purely as practical storage. So why would that person, I wonder, and we can't talk about individual cases, and I'm not asking you to, but just broadly, why would they be told to get an appeal ready, I wonder?
I'm not sure why.
That scenario that Gareth outlined it would mean the 5,000 should be paid?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
well, that's positive. All right, okay. And that's the information that you're working on as well.
Yeah.
We'll have to see how it pans out. You can't guarantee that, but that's your understanding of a very complex...
There should be no reason that when the unit costs X and it costs so much, as long as you have receipts to back that up, Greg.
Okay, listen, thanks very much, Martin. I appreciate your time this morning. That's Councillor Martin McDermott there. It's amazing the seems to be... It's not amazing because we know, I know. I would talk to someone about this scheme at least every other day, someone affected by it or someone that wants something clarified or something. Even actually sometimes it's just to let off steam on social media, in private message or what have you. But there is still so many unanswered questions, like real fundamental ones, like foundations, like inner leaves, like insurance. And we have to wait at least a year to find out if foundations are going to be included or what. So, and as we heard from John McLaughlin from the council, he said himself, I put it to him, and this is only his own opinion, by the way, not in a council, not as head of the council, by the way. I did ask him in a personal capacity. I said, look, if you would you rebuild a house on the old foundations? And his answer was, because he can't give advice and speaking in a personal capacity, was be that if it were he would do what he could to actually change the foundations. Apparently, 7,500 people will be left without home care this year, according to the newly published HSE National Service Plan for 2024. Jamie Farrelly's Policy and Communications Manager with Home and Community Care Ireland joins us on the programme now. Jamie, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning.
The 7,500, is that sort of your organisation's extrapolation from what the HSE is proposing, or are the HSE conceding, in your view, that that amount of people will be left without home care?
Well, it is our calculations, and I can explain them. So if you look at the National Service Plan last year in 2023, the target for home care was 24 million. This year, it's 22 million. Now, as recently as last November, in a letter to the Public Accounts Committee, the HSE said that demand for home care increases about 4% each year. If you take the 2023 target, we should have 25 million this year. Instead, we have 22. Not enough home care for 7,500 people. Now, 7,500 people who should be funded for home care this year, who won't be.
I mean, that, of course, affects a lots of different peoples in different ways. But presumably, too, that has an impact on our acute hospitals as well, because this is going to lead to difficult discharging, delayed discharging, as well as every lots of other issues.
Yes, absolutely. It's a very strange one, really. It comes back to the health service budget overruns. There was a problem around the budget last year, your listeners probably would have heard. And it's always been very confusing to us and never been properly explained by the HSE, the Department of Health, or by Department of Public Expenditure, why home care was put in this, because we know home care saves you money. If you're not having home care, you're probably going into a hospital or you're going to a nursing home. So in the long run, it costs a lot more. But it's never really been properly explained why home care has been cut in the budget.
Yeah, and your organisation is suggesting, and you really outlined it too a little earlier on, is that we're not actually planning for the future here, because we can't be, because we're not actually keeping a pace with the present demands.
No, in fact, we're going backwards, and I think this National Service Plan really shows that. And it's not just the early targets, there's more to it. So there's 2,000 less people receiving home support in 2024 compared to 2023. 2,000 less. We need 2,000 more, not 2,000 less. And if you look at other areas, you can see that there's really disjointed policy around home care. We don't actually have any home care strategy that guides this. So we have Sláinte Care, but it's not very detailed when it comes to home care. I already said there's more care in the community. There's no actual detail there. That's why we see kind of confusing measures within the National Service Plan. So we have this new complex case home support package. It looks a good initiative, but deliver more hours than the standard home care package. We already have one of these. It's called the intensive home care package, but only 25% of that target was met last year. So why are we introducing a new package when we have another one the targets have not been met?
Now, it's only
There's
anecdotal.
A lot of talk about...
Yeah, Janie, sorry, just ahead of the news here. It's only anecdotal, but the what I hear on this programme is not that the money isn't there for home care package, or it's not that home care packages haven't been approved. It's actually the staff and the resources to implement what has been approved. How big of a factor is that? I know you represent an awful lot of people in this area, but there seems to be a shortage of people available to do the sanctioned work around the country.
Yeah, there is. It's a serious problem. And in fairness to the government, some improvements have been made. So as of last year, home carers are going to be paid the living wage as minimum, and they will get mileage, so that's their expenses for travelling between clients. But really, we need to do a whole lot more than that. So we need to index the living wage. So they're only getting paid last year's living wage, not this year's living wage. That needs to be indexed. They need to get paid the living wage every year. Very strange that they be paid mileage, but they're not paid for... I'm sorry, they're paid for travel time, but they're not paid for mileage.
Mm-hmm.
So they get paid for 15 minutes. They don't get paid for petrol. But it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't show a good message. It doesn't attract new carers. Carers need a career development currently. There is no career development in home care. There is ad hoc, so you can, within a company, of course, you can become a manager. But there's no clear career progression to be advanced home care, you know, to help people with more serious conditions. We need social welfare reform. So one of the funny things, when you increase the wage of carers, it actually means some of them work less hours because they come into the income band of social welfare. You can't work over a certain amount of time or earn a certain amount. So it kind of has the opposite effect, really, when it comes to delivering capacity. So we really need a workforce strategy. That's something that this government should need to push through. And the next government election this year really needs to get on top of before it's too late, because Ireland is getting older. We're still a young enough population, so we have time. You know, it's not a crisis yet, but very quickly we will be. HSE's own national service plan says 25% increase in over 65s by 2030.
Can I just ask a question? Thank you for that. But before I let you go, you represent 32 member companies. Is there any statistics or any information on to the makeup of the staff in terms of, you know, whether we're having to hire staff from overseas to fill a lot of these vacancies, or if it's people that are already living here? Like, is there any information, official or anecdotal, Jamie, as to sort of the staff makeup of the companies that you represent?
Yeah, so we don't track from outside the EU. So, you know, people inside the EU are kind of treated as one.
Yeah.
So last year, the employment permit process was open to home care workers. So we got 500 came through last year. We'd expect that to grow this year. The quota is 1,000. We'd expect to hit closer to 1,000. Then internationally, the research will say that a good amount of home care workers would be from outside the home country.
Is it fair to say, or is it a reach, Jamie, that for the future of home care, that it can't really be sustained by staffing from within Ireland only, that to meet our care needs going forward, there will always be or need to be an international, national an element to it?
Yeah, there will definitely need to be an international element, of course, but that doesn't mean we should give up on the domestic
workforce. No, of course not.
We should be attracting people. We should be getting school leavers. We should be training them up. Yeah. That's something we don't do. It tends to be carers come kind of maybe, you know, after the kids have grown up and they go back to work. We need to kind of...
It's not seen as a career from the get-go. All right, Jamie, listen, it wasn't a loaded question, actually. It was just something I was quite interested in. I appreciate your time. Jamie Farrelly, Policy and Communications Manager with Home and Community Care Ireland. Heading to the news now, which will be a minute late.